Last night's rain seems to be clearing. Now we're looking at a more subtle picture over Delaware here on WDPB, with a mild southwesterly blowing the heavy cloud away, and a lot more sunshine.
Mayhew, Delaware. It's mid-morning at the all-night diner.
The Sandman. 24 hours.
Hour one. The flies walked into the web.
Betty, can I have a coffee refill and a tuna on rye?
Sure, hon. Coming right up.
Betty Munro is the waitress. Early middle-aged, blonde hair going grey, a little overweight. On her days off, after she's tidied the house, Betty writes stories. She writes them in longhand, on yellow legal pads. Sometimes she writes about her ex-husband, Bernard, and about her son, Bernard Jr., who went off to college and never came back to her. She makes these stories end happily. Most of her stories, however, are about her customers. They look at her, and they just see a waitress. They don't know she's nursing a secret that keeps her aching calf muscles and her coffee-scalded fingers and her weariness from dragging her down. It's her secret. She's never shown anyone her stories. One day she knows she'll package the pads up, bind them in brown paper, send them to Dear Abby or Jackie Collins.
One tuna on rye and a coffee. There.
Thanks.
They'll read them and they'll publish them and everyone will marvel at her depiction of happy, happy small town life. But you're a writer, Johnny Carson will say to her. How do you know what it's like to be a waitress? She'll smile. She won't tell him. It'll be her secret. People think Betty talks to them so easily because she's a waitress. They don't realize she's a writer, gathering material.
Betty, I'm going to use the bathroom. If Donna comes by, tell her to wait, okay?
Sure, Judy.
Judy Talbot. 19, maybe 20. Mixed ethnicity. A leather biker jacket covered in political badges. Attractive to boys, but prefers to be with girls.
Ma'am, could I trouble you for more coffee over here, if you please?
No trouble at all, hun. It's not yet 11. You still got an hour to kill.
Yeah, I know.
The young man, reading the paper now, Mark Brewer, he'd spoken to her easy as anything, just as if he was really talking to a waitress. Tell them you're a writer and they shut up tighter than clams. Mark looks to be early 20s, fair-haired, clean-cut, friendly. He's wearing a suit because he's going for an interview with that big chemical works. Maybe tonight Betty will write a story about him. He'll get the job. Marry the boss's daughter.
I said it's all meringue and razor blades, and she said,
Mr. and Mrs. Fletcher, welcome. Take a load off.
Cheeseburger black coffee, please, Betty. You, Kate?
I'll have a salad, low-cal dressing. Oh, and a Sanka with low-fat milk, if you have it.
Uh-huh. I'll have to see.
Now that couple, the Fletchers. Gary's big, a little overweight, too. He does karate and collects old weapons. Kate comes from money. She's so smart, so alert. She's petite. Not so much pretty, but attractive. Town talk has it Gary married her for her money, but Betty can see they dote on each other. Like lovebirds. Take one lovebird away, the other hankers and dies. All Betty's stories have happy endings. That's because she knows where to stop. She's realized the real problem with stories. If you keep them going long enough, they always end in death.
Hey, Betty, when you're ready.
With you soon, Marsh.
Sure.
Marsh Janowski sits on a stool at the counter and lights up a smoke. He's thin, and his overalls are dirty. Maybe he didn't learn too much from spending 5 years in the prison laundry. He's not overly smart.
Here you go, Gary. Kate?
Oh, thank you, Betty.
That looks delicious.
Refill, hun?
Betty already knows Judy's story, that she's in love with her friend Donna, who sometimes calls herself Foxglove. Now she notices the bruise on Judy's face. The relationship isn't going too well. Betty isn't small-minded. A writer can't afford to be. What those girls do is a sin against God and unnatural, but still. Betty feels sorry for them. In her stories, she's already married both of them off to fine young men. Like that one, over there.
There you go, Marsh.
Yeah, that's good.
Betty's sort of looked after Marsh since Marsha died. Marsh and Marsha, the writer in her whispers, they were obviously meant for each other. But Marsha drank herself to death, died yellow and whispering in a sanitarium. Marsh, he went sort of crazy after that. A good mailman gone bad. State pen, stealing from the mails. 5 years. He's a trucker these days, working out of some upstate town that had never heard of him. But he still looks in on her every few weeks. For old time's sake.
When do you get off, honey?
You know, Marsh, not until after lunch.
It's okay, I'll wait.
They aren't just customers. Not just to Betty, either. In the far corner of the diner sits John Dee, once the self-styled Dr. Destiny. His skin is shrunken and stretched over his skull. He looks mummified, a few strands of hair still cling to his scalp. A few of his teeth are missing. His eyes are huge, almost lidless balls set deep in their sockets. He's small, practically naked, except for a huge leather sheepskin-trimmed coat made for someone much bigger than he is. In the first hour, he waited and watched. The cold fire in the heart of the ruby whispers to him, as it whispers to the rest of the world, songs of madness and despair. And while it is whispered, the insects crawl in slowly, in ones and twos, into his web. They aren't just customers. They are raw material.
More coffee, hon?
Hmm? Oh, I've still got this one. Thank you.
He's been here since Betty came on shift this morning, nursing coffee after coffee, hardly drinking at all, just watching them cool. Away in a dream world of his own, staring at those things lying on the table in front of him. She wonders about him. The red stone on its chain. And the other thing, the eyeball thing. Is that jewelry? She'll talk to him when things get quieter, draw him out. Then tonight, when Marsh has climbed back in his truck and headed back upstate, she'll write a story about him. And in her story, she'll make him happy. Hour two. He is forced to act to prevent any of the flies from leaving. Now he has the ruby back in his possession. It isn't hard.
I don't believe it! I'm going to be late for my interview! Jesus H! Oh, no, 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 no. Ma'am, I'm leaving $5 on the table here. That should cover it. I'm sorry. Oh, shoot. If I run, maybe I can still make it.
Mark, the young man with the job interview, hesitates. Beyond him, unnoticed in the corner, Dr. D's face is bathed in a red glow. His big round eyes gaze at the young man. Mark stops. His mind has gone blank.
Oh, gosh. Oh, heck. Ma'am, more coffee, if it's no trouble.
Sure. Right, coffee.
Great coffee.
Hour three. Afternoon soap opera.
Please, I would like to watch the television. Will you make it work?
You want the TV back on? No problem.
Donna still has not turned up. Judy is on the payphone by the restrooms. She is growing agitated.
Hello? Mrs. Walker, okay, Miranda. Can I speak to Rose? Thank you. Rose, it's Judy. Listen, have you seen Donna today? Well, we had a fight last night, and I'm sort of worried. She's not answering her phone. split up. No, of course we haven't. It's just her mom. You think she might have gone back to her mom? Shit. Hello? Mrs. Kavanagh? This is Judy, Donna's friend. Have you seen Donna today? You don't have to approve of me, Mrs. Kavanagh, but I just want to... Mrs. Kavanagh? Hello? Tight-ass old hag! Sorry. I wish I were dead. Damn it.
Hour 4. He watches television. A puppet show.
Look, everyone! It's Dino the Dinosaur! Yay! Hey, kids! Dino's trying to tell me something. Gee, Dino! I didn't know it.
Dr. D has never tried to send the power of the ruby into someone's mind at such a distance.
And you want to tell me something else, do you, Dino? We're all gonna die. Dino says we're all gonna die. Dino told me. He says we should slash our wrists right now. Well, Uncle Bill has his pocket knife somewhere down here. Here it is!
We apologize for interrupting Uncle Bill's playhouse. This is due to technical difficulties. Please stand by.
Hour 5. The flies get restless.
Gary?
I'm saying it's weird. Nobody's come in. It seems like we must have been here for hours. But it seems like we just came in. Something's very... I love this place.
Me too. Anyway, I had these horrible dreams this morning. Horrible.
The entertainer, Uncle Bill, who appears with the puppet Dino the Dinosaur, is in a stable condition. Now, back to those riots.
Hour 6. Judy is writing a letter on the legal pad she keeps in her bag. It is her fourth attempt.
Dear Donna, I don't blame you for all you said about us last night, and I said I was sorry after I hit you, and I am sorry. Damn it!
I'm saying it's weird. Nobody's come in. It seems like we must have been...
Donna, I love you. I only hurt you because I was scared of losing you. I'm sorry.
Hour 7. He makes them feel good. He makes their dreams come true. Gives them what they want.
Steve? Yeah, I'm good. I know, 3 years ago I was stuck in a diner waiting for the mailroom job interview. Not a bad career path since. Yeah, so, next. It's an interesting...
Mark is running a blue chip electronics corporation.
Have your people call my people. Money.
In his dreams.
Oh, yeah.
And Gary's having a $20 hooker in the convertible Kate bought for him. Then he'll beat the woman up, throw her out of the car, drive off. He gets such a kick out of doing that.
Do it, bitch.
Kate, beside him, doesn't hear him. Kate is in the mortuary of a funeral home, carrying a stainless steel tray with Gary's severed head upon it. She knows she'll never have to worry about Gary's little infidelities again.
This is better.
No more lipstick on his collar. He's all hers. She puts her tongue in his open mouth. Hour 8. John D. moves among them, experiencing their little pleasures, their minor joys.
Bill and Steve Ballmer will have to postpone that meeting.
Pathetic.
I kiss your dead gray lips.
Oh, yeah.
Lousy cheap whore. Lucky I didn't strangle you with it.
Yes.
The Dreamstone whispers to him of elsewhere pains and faraway madnesses, of far-off deaths and distant terrors. This comforts him. He feels echoes of their dreams. Betty has dislodged Stephen King from the bestseller lists.
Really, Oprah? I always dreamed it was possible,
It does little for him.
Sad.
Simple pleasures no longer excite him.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. Oh, don't stop.
Oh.
Judy's bittersweet reunion with Donna provides fractionally more stimulation for him.
Jeez, is that all I am?
Marsh thinks he's dead. Drank himself to hell and gone, rigid on a slab, his liver has failed, his skin is slowly getting cold.
Sweet.
Dee almost gets enjoyment from that. Nearly as much enjoyment as he gets from watching his precious Ruby in action, not just here in the diner, but unleashed upon the world.
News at 6. Is everybody going crazy? Reports are coming in from across the state about a wave of madness, suicide, and bad dreams.
Dr. D feels pleasure. Hour 9.
Filthy dirt, bitch!
Conflict, he decides, reveals character.
Marsh, honey, please calm down.
Phil! Lesbo! Phil!
Please, she's just a kid.
You bastard! I'll kill you! Let go of me! I'll kill
all
him!
All you need is a proper man. A real man. I'll show you, bitch. I'll give it to you.
Hour 10. They love him. He has dispensed with the overcoat and naked is hoisted shoulder high and carried around the diner.
Love you. Dee, we love you. Dee, we love you. Dee, we love you.
Beautiful. You're so beautiful.
Mark uses one of Betty's carving knives to amputate a finger.
I am beautiful!
Dr. D, great and wise and wonderful D.
Dr. D, great and wise and wonderful D.
I am your god!
Mark proffers the severed little finger from his left hand. Dr. D licks the blood from it. A god must not appear ungracious toward a sacrifice. However, he derives no satisfaction from it. He doesn't know what he wants to eat. There must be something.
Dr. D, great and wise and wonderful me!
Hour 11. He catches up on the news.
Nightmares, sleeplessness, and insanity reported earlier on local news is shaping up to be a planet-wide phenomenon. Reports have already come in from Asia and Europe of accidents and disasters from people falling asleep on freeways, planes crashing, spot surgery. Report is Mary Gentile. Mary!
Leading fundamentalists have begun to proclaim the Armageddon. Internationally, people can't sleep, or they have nightmares, and anybody even marginally mentally unbalanced is going over the edge. No international superheroes were available for comment, so I spoke to Herschel of local super team, the amazing Herschel and Betty.
Hi, am I on? Is this working? Okay, yeah, well, me and Betty, we figure it's probably rays.
And finally, in Baltimore, a woman claims she's taught her dog to tap dance. More on that after the break.
Hour 12. It is time for them to get to know each other better.
Now, how are you?
Worst, most shameful thing I've ever done? Oh, gee, I can't tell you. I can't. I was 18. I was at college. I was drunk. To begin with, I was drunk anyway. Next door to my apartment was a funeral home. My boyfriend had just split. That was why I got drunk. And I was horny and crazy. I just walked. And I found myself outside the funeral home, and I just sort of tried the door. I think maybe I was looking for some place to pee, you know? A ladies' room? And the door opened, and I was in the mortuary. There was a body on this table. Young guy. You could see he'd been, you know, good-looking. And I thought I'd be freaked out, but I wasn't. I was kind of excited. I went over to the body, and I started to play with it. Then I climbed on top of him and started... I started really going. And all of a sudden, blood started to well up in his mouth, and I put my face down, and I don't want to tell you this. I don't want to tell anybody this. Sometimes, when I'd make love to Gary, I'd ask him to lie real still. I'd close my eyes and pretend. But it was never the same.
Please. Hour 13. They get to know each other intimately. John Dee sits on the counter watching. He is huddled in his huge coat once more, his hands inside it. But they're still. His generative organs shriveled and atrophied long ago. Yet he is enjoying this.
Yes. Nate.
Hour 14, midnight, and he consults the oracles. Judy, Kate, and Betty are the three fates.
Tell me my future.
You came from dust. You walk the dust.
You go back to dust.
Tell me my future.
There is no future for you, John Dee. It's a future bounded by walls and guards and the sour smell of madness.
And then the skein of your life is cut, son of your mother.
Tell me my future!
You have stolen some of the power of dreams.
You will take all of it.
You will crush out the Dream Lord's life in your hands, John Dee.
That's good. That's very good. I like that future. Clever flies, clever little insects.
Hour 15. He gives them back their minds. For a while.
My hand. My finger.
Why? What did we do?
Why us, goddammit? Why are you doing this stuff to us? You're gonna kill us.
Why? Because I can! Just killing time.
He takes off the overcoat.
Turn out the lights.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Hour 16. Party games. Murder in the dark. Hour 17, confession and penance.
Betty, you know Marcia knew about us. That was why she began drinking. Hold the nail.
Where?
Over the back of my hand.
Okay.
Hammer.
Here.
I hated her. I mean, she's the only woman I ever loved, but I hated her.
Marsh hammers the nail through the hand he has resting on the counter.
Another nail! Same again!
Okay.
New Year's Eve, I blew my whole paycheck on a crate of vodka, left it in our bedroom, went out of town for a week. When I got back, she was in the hospital. I as good as killed her. Another nail! I'll tell you something else. When I was in the pen, I saw your son, little Bernie. He'd been hustling his ass in Gotham, got picked up for knifing his pimp. A fella could have him for a pack of cigarettes.
I don't...
Hey, oh, jeez.
I don't...
Betty.
I don't want to hear this shit.
I did!
Hour 18. He brings out the beast in them. The old male they call Marsh gnaws at its trapped front leg. It has followed the pack at a distance for years, hunting for scraps. The females, nervous of the coming conflict, huddle together for comfort.
Don't attract attention.
Shh, damn it.
Come on, then!
Gary, the pack leader,
if you think you're mad enough,
is spoiling for a fight.
Yeah?
They growl. The young male advances. Soon the females will all be his.
Oh, I can whip you, lard ass.
Come on!
The pack leader pauses, then springs.
Ah!
The pack leader's teeth are strong and sharp. He is a good leader. The challenge has been met. The smell of blood is heavy on the air.
Even the man who is pure in heart and says his prayers each night, he become a wolf, and the wolf bane blue, and the autumn moon is bright.
The victory, like the blood, is sweet. Hour 19. He lies to them.
To prove it's safe, I'll have the green side, you have the red half. Trusting the wicked queen, Snow White took a bite from the rosy red apple and instantly fell down as if she were dead.
But she's not really dead, is she, Dr. D? Is she?
Hour 20. It is time for entertainment.
Even when the darkest clouds are in the sky, you mustn't cry and you mustn't sigh. Spread a little happiness as you go by.
Please try. What's the use of worrying and feeling blue? When days are long, keep on smiling through. Spread a little happiness till dreams come true.
That's enough now.
Hour 21. He shows them the delights of belief.
I want to see it, Doctor. I trust you. I will see the glory.
Judy holds a meat skewer in one hand and an ice pick in the other. She holds them, the tips pointed at her face. She stabs them into her eyes.
Oh,
oh, oh,
oh God! I can see it! Sweet Lord! I can see the glory!
Hour 22. All is quiet. The TV station suddenly went off air a while back when the transmitter engineers fell asleep, or worse, joining the rest of the world in its collective nightmare. The only person alive and awake in the diner is Dr. D.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Around him is a scene of carnage. Betty's head has been cut off. It dangles from Betty's body, which carries a large meat cleaver in its right hand. Rivulets of blood dry under Judy's punctured eyes as she sits lifeless, propped up against a bench seat. From a hand nailed to the countertop, dangles Marsh's arm, hacked off just below the shoulder. He lies on the floor in a pool of blood. Kate, fully clothed, straddles a naked Gary. Both are dead and spattered with entrails. Hers. Dr. D picks his way through the bodies, back to his seat. Hour 23. The smell of death fills the diner. Hour 24. The Lord of Dreams walks unsteadily into the diner.
Ah!
What do you think you are doing?
Ah, hello. I'm glad you're here. It was starting to get a bit boring. But you don't look strong enough to even make it interesting, do you?